behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Boland.
Ben, today we're talking about automotive trends, I guess mostly 2014 trends, things that we're seeing become popular, I guess. Right,
yeah.
And also, I think we're going to throw in there, we're going to pepper in a few, stuff that we've seen go away, stuff that we wish would go away, stuff that's long gone maybe, stuff that we've just seen maybe once or twice that I don't know if you can call it a trend, but maybe it'll catch on, things
maybe
like that.
Maybe a flash in the pan.
Yeah, let's just add some stuff, some interest to this at the end, I think. And, we've got a whole bunch of different things that we want to talk about that are supposedly car trends to watch in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, I guess, caveats to this whole thing. So, well, I mean, what's your opinion on some of the stuff we've seen recently come out? I mean, some cool stuff, some technology type stuff, some bigger trends like the automakers are imposing, and I don't mean imposing, but some of the automakers are creating.
But it's a fair point because we, if I can just interject here on this, sometimes when we see a trend go across an industry or across a company, one of the big questions is this something that car buyers want to have in their vehicles, or is this something that car companies want to have in their vehicles?
Oh, that's a good point. And that's what I was trying to get at there in this roundabout way. It's always tough to start something like this with a general, like a big statement
that blankets
the whole thing. But what I mean is, a lot of times we're going to see stuff that comes from the automakers that they're saying, okay, well, there's going to be a push towards alternative fuels. There's going to be a push towards, whatever trend.
Mileage or something.
Exactly. Mileage is the big trend, right? So they're going to do that. And then other things that, car owners themselves say, well, it doesn't come from the factory this way, but this is what I like, and I'm going to do that. And then that catches on.
Like, I want more diesel options.
Exactly. And yeah, maybe that's okay. That's probably more of a manufacturer thing.
Oh, that is.
Because I guess
right.
a homeowner would have a difficult time switching over to diesel. I mean, it could be done, but I'm saying things like,
better interfaces, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. So stuff that somebody can do on their own, either get some aftermarket part or something like
more
that.
More cup holders.
Yeah, more cup holders. That's right. Again, manufacturer trend. See, these can be broken down in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And one last thing I need to say is that, what we're talking about is stuff, we're going to talk about stuff in the news recently. So automotive news in general. So we're getting it from a bunch of different sources.
Yep.
Some of these things you're going to recognize as being trends that you'll see as well wherever you are in the world, because we've got a worldwide listening audience right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Australia will be different from stuff that's going to be happening in Europe, and stuff's going to be happening in the United States versus China, all kinds of places, right? So you will see some of this. You won't see some of it in other areas. And then there's going to be those weird cases where someone's going to call it right in and say, well, you didn't even mention this. This is something we do here in Australia, but we've never even seen that here in the United States.
You didn't even mention the kangaroo plows that are required to be put on the front of all Holdens. No, I'm kidding. I am so kidding. Please don't email me.
I'm not condoning
killing kangaroos or plowing through them. But this is great. And this leaves us with an interesting proposition. Now, for a while we often will give our opinion, and Scott, you and I take pains to separate something that's our opinion from something that is a known fact, right?
Exactly.
We don't want our opinions to masquerade as objective observations.
Yeah, sure.
But, we don't often make too many predictions, and some of our other shows in the How Stuff Works Network, like Tech Stuff especially, Jonathan and Lauren have a tough time with their prediction episodes. They feel like there's a lot riding on it.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause they make bold statements or whatever that I think this is going to happen. And then, at the end of the year, they come back and they say, whether they were accurate or not. And a lot of times that's tough to say. I mean,
it is. There are quite a few variables at play. So we're just talking about some trends, and we can loosely categorize some of these, as you said, Scott, manufacturer trends or car buyer trends. We can also say trends that are rising, trends are going away, what we think will or won't work and why.
Mm-hmm.
But that part of that last part, what we think will or won't work, that's the opinion part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about things like, stuff I'm seeing a lot of recently, I guess, possible trends on the way.
Yeah.
Trends that seem to have gone away already, that stuff that we saw even just a year or two ago that seem to be gone. Maybe even some that I wish would go away. How about that? That's a category that I want to cover.
Okay.
And, that's completely opinion, obviously. And then there's also long gone trends, which are things that maybe disappeared decades ago that people haven't really thought about. And then I'm wondering if, like, clothing or, you know, like, hairstyles or whatever.
Sure. If it'll come back.
If it's going to come back. Yeah, nice. That's kind of an interesting thought, I think. And we'll see. But we'll get to all that at the end, I promise.
Yeah.
So right now, you want to start with some of the, I guess some of the trends that, you know, the journalists, the automotive people that are in the know, I suppose.
The auto show, the CES trends, stuff like that.
Yeah, the people that work the circuits, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, they say, well, this is kind of what to watch for because, you know, I'm down here on the floor at the 2014 Detroit Auto Show, and these are five things that I've noticed a lot of manufacturers doing. So, as a matter of fact, that's the one I want to begin with, if that's okay.
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right, this is from USA Today. And the writer's name is Chris Woodyard, and Chris writes from early January, so he was at the Detroit Auto Show, and exactly what I was talking about, you know, I'm trying to just summarize this real quick, because we're going to go through several different of these, okay?
Sure.
One thing is that he wants to mention that you shouldn't count out the good old gasoline engine. That's his first observation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people like to point to automakers that are pushing towards hybrids, alternative fuels.
Yeah, or even full electric.
Full electric vehicles, exactly. So he says, you know, with turbocharging and direct injection and increasingly sophisticated computer engine management, automakers are getting previously unattainable levels of power and fuel efficiency at the same time from the good old gasoline engine. And I think a lot of people have kind of written it off as like, well, you know, I know that, you know, we're pushing towards these modern technologies and, you know, we're maybe working towards an all-electric future. I know that's scary to say, you know, for me it is. Anyways,
it's possible.
We've talked about this so many times. I don't personally believe it's ever going to go
we
away.
We have like 19 other episodes you can listen to where we talk about this in depth.
Yeah, he outright says they're not going away, they're just getting better. And I feel good about this one because we've said this over the past five or 6 years that we've been doing this. We've been saying I can't ever see a time when either gasoline or diesel engines completely go away and there's no more of those.
Well, I have, I agree with, this journalist's assessment here. I think that he is focusing more upon the performance potential of these vehicles. So that to me, I'm thinking, supercars, high performance vehicles, racing, but also there's another point that needs to be made. And this is a little bit of a soapbox, so I'll keep it brief.
Sure.
All right. So the demise of the book, right? The physical hard copy book has been just a few years around the corner for years, right?
Oh, sure.
Even in, if you look back in, old Popular Mechanics, which are some of my favorite magazines to read, when their predictions of the future, have, you know, books gone by the space age time of the 1980s. But, what we've seen is that books remain incredibly popular across the world. And one of the things that happened is that when new e-readers came in and things that required internet access came in, a certain segment of the population was able to afford that innovation, but they weren't this innovation was not affordable to everybody throughout the world. However, the price on books dropped and the technology to print books improved. So it turns out that more people actually have access to books than did before this dawn of e-readers. I think that the same thing can easily apply to alternative fuels, to full electric or hybrid vehicles. The infrastructure, the gargantuan infrastructure used to make gasoline engines and to improve gasoline and diesel engines not only still exists, but is getting better. And I could see the price of that technology dropping to a point where more people can actually afford their own transportation.
Now, wouldn't that be great?
But yeah. And
the thing is, they point to several different engines here that are getting, I mean, great horsepower ratings out of very small engines. I mean, we're talking about, you know, small four-cylinder, small six-cylinder engines. I mean, even Cadillac has a 2-liter four-cylinder engine now. That gets like 10% more torque from this, you know, this turbocharged version. It feels like a V6 that has something like, you know, 295 or 300 horsepower, but it's a much smaller, much more compact engine that does the same job as the bigger engine that used to, because torque is the big thing with it. It's a heavy vehicle, so you want to get that, and horsepower, of course, but torque is big in that. And then there's also performance engines that are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, do you remember not long ago that, you know, to get 100 horsepower per liter was a huge deal.
Right, yeah.
Now they're getting significantly more than 100 horsepower per liter out of a lot of performance engines, these tuned, you know, four-cylinder engines, like 2.5 liters that are getting, you know, 350 horsepower. So, you know, the advances that are being made are jumping up, you know, level by level. They're just getting better and better as time goes on. People are refining the design mm-hmm. and making it work for them.
Well, gas cars are becoming smarter. ICE is becoming smarter at the same time that hybrid or electric is becoming more feasible. Notice I say feasible. I don't say ideal yet, because there's still quite a bit. There's still quite a long way to go.
There's a big gap that still remains between what they're able to create and the infrastructure that's allowed to support that. And you know what? That's going to come up in just a little while too, because there's another big one that we're going to talk about the infrastructure is critical for this one, more so even than the electric cars that we're seeing now. And that's kind of a tip off, I guess, on
a little bit of foreshadowing.
But how about we talk about mileage?
Oh, because mileage is probably one. I would say it's one of the top three trends.
I think it is too, and so does Chris Woodyard, because that's the second one that he wrote about was gas mileage and how everybody is treating this as the way to go. Now, all the easy fixes have been done, as according to him.
Yep.
Now the people have already put people. When I say people, I mean auto manufacturers. They've put smaller engines into some of the bigger cars. You know, the existing vehicles have already been adapted to have, like, well, we can do with the, you know, the 3 liter V6 instead of the 4 liter V8.
Right.
You know? So instead of a small V8, you get a big V6.
Mm-hmm.
And you may jump from a V6 down to a 4 cylinder. So that's what they've already done.
And they've looked at economy of weight, power to weight ratio, which is another easy fix.
Well, that's sort of easy, but
until you get to materials.
Yeah. See, we're getting to the materials and I'm glad you said that, Ben, because just think about what's happened just this year with Ford and its F-150 series. Now they've gone to an all aluminum body on the F-150 series just this year. So for 2015 model year vehicles in 2014, they're going to cut 700 pounds out of the vehicle just by shifting over to aluminum.
That's wild. That's like one gorilla.
It's amazing. It's a huge amount of weight. I mean, it really is. That's like four grown adults, you know, in the vehicle.
Two gorillas.
Well, okay. Yeah, something like that's huge. But anyways, it's a lot of weight and, you know, huge deal for them because, you know, aluminum is something that a lot of people don't think of for bodies.
Right. Yeah.
Because aluminum bodies, we think of race cars and race cars, if you lean on a race car, it's going to dent.
Exactly.
And that's kind of a characteristic that I wouldn't think you'd want in a work truck, really.
No.
I mean, because they get banged up already. I mean, even though that they're solid steel bodies. So we'll see how this plays out. I mean, I know they're strong, but, we'll find out what happens with these. Now, you know, less weight equals better fuel economy, of course, and that's why they're doing it. And, you know, they're going to have to come up with these highly sophisticated, different materials. And I know that carbon fiber is one we talk a lot about, but it's very expensive to do. And it's still, still kind of,
And it's still just I'll be completely candid here and pardon my French. It's still damn hard to make carbon fiber.
It is. It still is. I mean, it's still stuff of, you know, exotic supercars, but I know that there are little bits of pieces here and there that manufacturers, including in what we'll call typical cars in air quotes, you know, but, one of the other big things that they're doing is watch for this trend, automatic transmissions. And that all goes into the gas mileage. And the reason it goes into gas mileage is because they're creating really advanced 7, 8, 9 speed automatic transmissions. Now, I never would have thought I'd see a 9 speed automatic transmission because, you know, when they started doing these multi-speed transmission automatics, instead of, you know, going up to maybe 4 or 5 speeds, they started bumping them up to 6 or 7, and now they're all the way up to 9. And that, I believe, is for mileage, of course. It's also for rider comfort because, you know, the shift points are very smooth, it comes about very often, of course.
I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly what I was going to point out. It doesn't feel like 9. You don't feel all 9 shift points.
Well, it used to be, you know, like the Lexus would have like an 8-speed automatic, and
right.
You know, like that was just for ride quality, not so much fuel economy, but now, auto manufacturers, like even I think the Grand Cherokee has something like a 9-speed automatic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to double check that, but I believe that's one. Acura TLX, I think, has one. The Chrysler 200 sedans. So it looks like Acura and Chrysler are really getting into these, you know, these 9-speed automatic transmissions. And they call them, they're industry first, but they're definitely going to be followed by others.
Well, yeah, of course. I think that's an accurate thing. We're going to see more of this kind of computer run auto transmission. Just because it's so effective to advertise it as a long-term savings on the cost of ownership.
And they're extremely efficient as far as shift quality. So, you're going to see that automatic transmissions are going to come into play into a lot of performance vehicles as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you already see this, really. I mean, you see cars with paddle shifters, and there's really no clutch pedal in these cars. And some of them are high performance vehicles, and people say, well, I don't really like that. I like to be able to kind of row through the gears with my right hand or my left hand, I guess.
Well, yeah.
Some countries.
Yeah.
But, and I like that as well. But when you think you're like, okay, an automatic transmission can shift, you know, much, much faster than you and something, what do we say, like 0.5 seconds?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, not 0.5, 0.15 seconds.
Right. Less time than it takes to blink, right?
Yeah. It's like the blink of an eye. That's much faster than you can shift your car, you know, reliably every time. You might be able to jam it into gear once or twice, but you're cause damage. And
right.
there's a lot of other things we have to talk about with transmissions in that regard.
But. Can I throw in something here
while
we're talking about some of this stuff? Mm-hmm. One of the big things that is a definite trend, and Noel, play the conspiratorial music if you must. The black box mandate is really going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it will.
For everybody who somehow missed this episode that we did, which is a great episode, here in the United States for a number of years, legislators and car manufacturers have been having, I won't call it an argument, I'll call it a discussion, a spirited discussion, about whether cars should have black boxes the same way that airlines have, right?
Yeah, and we're talking more in depth, I guess, than what's already out there. You know, things that store the last bit of information as far as, like, you know, the speed that it was going,
mm-hmm.
the, you know, what gear the person was in, whether the seatbelts were buckled, you know, that stuff.
Maintenance records, even, like, oil change.
All of that plus a lot of information. So we're talking a much broader program, I guess.
Right. And the, and then also with that, the possibility, I don't think the GPS stuff will come to pass because it's too expensive, but the possibility of it is there. In our earlier episode, we talked about a couple of things regarding this that a lot of people did not know. And one of those is that a lot of car manufacturers already have something like this in their vehicle. As a matter of fact, if you live in the United States and you drive a recent car, then odds are you have something like this. But as you said, Scott, it's not going to be as broad.
Yeah. OnStar, anybody?
Right, exactly. And the second thing, which I hated to point out, the second thing was that although I received before a lot of email from people saying, well, I don't want the government tracking me in my car. Well, the thing is, do you have a cell phone? Do you drive in your car with your cell phone? Because guess what, buddy? It's too late.
It's possible, and in some cases, it's already happening.
Right, yeah. And, you know,
of course, not all cases.
Yeah, those cases are more like they open up an investigation. Mm-hmm. But with those black boxes, which are becoming more and more of a real thing, we see that there are some strong pros, and there are also some strong cons. Without getting too far down the rabbit hole on that one, we recommend that you check it out, and we recommend that you check on your car yourself. See what you're rocking under the hood.
This is a huge can of worms topic, really. I mean,
right.
When you get to it. I mean, we've covered some of it already. There's probably another, I don't know, three or four programs that we could talk about this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. But there's it's going to lead me later to a car trend that's going away.
Very good.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry.
So let's move on to number three from Chris here from USA Today. And this is just one of a few lists that we're going to go through. And I promise we'll go through them quicker than this. Mm-hmm. This initial list is the one that I wanted to really focus on because I think this is a good list. I think this person really has got a good grasp of what's mm-hmm. going on here. And there's more to it than this. But anyways, let's get back into number three. Luxury can be affordable, is what Chris says. Now, when I read that headline, I knew right away what Chris was going for here because I'm seeing a lot of commercials for premium brands that are offering entry-level vehicles
mm-hmm.
for right around the $30,000 range. And that is, I was talking with my wife about this weekend. To me, because I'm driving an older car now, I have a 2005, haven't had a payment to make in a long, long time. I mean, it's several years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I think like $30,000 for a new car, I think that's a lot of money still because I'm just not accustomed to paying that.
Right.
But that's pretty much the norm now. If you want to get, an entry level sedan, just about of any kind of any decent quality, really.
Yeah.
And if you want to get a compact, you know, that's something different. You can go much, much cheaper. But a sedan, you know, family sedan, that type of vehicle would be just about right. So, but we're seeing offerings from Audi, BMW,
Mercedes.
That's right.
That's the one that blows me away.
Yeah. So you know about the Mercedes, right?
Yeah. The CLA sedan, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like just under 30. It's like $29,000.
Yeah. $29,995. And, and I've seen these on the road. I mean, they look like a Mercedes. I guess they drive like a Mercedes, sort of, because I've read some critics that have said, well, you know, if you drive a bigger Mercedes, you know, one of these $60,000 jobs, you know, that right. you normally see, and then you drive this one, you're going to be a little bit upset with the quality. But I think that somebody stepping in and saying, stepping into a Mercedes dealership and saying, what have you got for me? Here's my budget. And they say, well, we've got this CLA sedan. I think they're going to be impressed with what they find. I mean, it's still a Mercedes. It's still mm-hmm. got a lot of the features that Mercedes have. It's just maybe not the top quality Mercedes, obviously.
Right. And it's still, to be fair, it still is going to have the increased cost of ownership associated with a Mercedes. Mm-hmm. But all that being said, I would love to have a $30,000 Mercedes.
Well, so would I. And, you know, there's other vehicles. We mentioned Audi because they mm-hmm. have the Q3 series, which I think is Q3. Is that a, I think that's the wagon shaped one, right?
Yeah, it's like a crossover.
Yeah, a crossover vehicle, and that's less than $30,000. I mean, right under $30,000.
Uh-huh.
BMW's got a new 2 Series vehicle that is an entry level coupe that starts at, I think it's $32,001, so just a little bit above. But again, $32,000 for a brand new BMW that, you know, something you wouldn't be ashamed to be seen in by any means, and it's a beautiful car.
Can't beat it with a stick, man.
I mean, you could also consider other vehicles. There are other, you know, like there's the Hyundai Genesis that, you know, is a premium luxury sedan that's right around $35,000. Now, mm-hmm. but you're not getting the premium brand name if that's what you're really looking for, like the Audi, BMW, Mercedes.
Right, yeah.
You know, Hyundai, it's stepping up. I mean, I understand they're coming up in the world, really, mm-hmm. and very quickly in the last few years, but, see, if you go to that area, you don't need the brand name, I guess, the label on the back of the jeans, you know, you don't need that.
Right.
The Hyundai Genesis, you know, that's like a premium luxury sedan with all of the features. You're going to get the fully loaded
all
version,
the bells
whatever.
And whistles, yeah.
It starts at 35, may go up a little bit from that, but, that's also affordable luxury.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to watch, I guess, for 2014, 2015. The next one is, sleepers. Now, he mentions sleepers in a different way than we talk about sleepers. Now,
right, yeah. Earlier we had said sleeper cars, as in cars that you wouldn't suspect have the performance they do, but that's not what he's talking about.
No, he is talking about a vehicle that, you know, doesn't seem like it's much of anything, but it's probably going to shake up the whole market, I guess, in that arena. Like the new full-size Ford Transit vehicle. All right, so you know this is a vehicle that sits in the corner at the trade shows and at, you know, the Detroit Auto Show and everything, because
yeah.
you know, it's something that they bring it out because it's a new vehicle and it's interesting, I guess, to some people. But
it's like a standby, though.
Yeah, not a lot of people are going to pay much attention to it, but they want to point out that, you know, it's so efficient, it's so well designed, I guess, that, you know, like anybody that has this commercial van need is really going to be blown away by the new full size Ford Transit vehicle. And mm-hmm. it's funny to think about it, but something that really garners no attention. No attention for real. I mean, you know, like as far as mass public
comparatively.
Goes, comparatively, that's a good way to say it. That it's probably going to really be a segment bust. I don't want to say buster, I guess, maybe.
Oh, okay. I see. Like busting the genres of the cars.
Exactly. Because, you know, people think about like the old Ford Econoline vans and things like that.
Which I would still drive. I would drive one of those today.
I would too. And, you know, but this is something brand new and different. And, mm. and it's supposedly it's going to be something that we're going to see on the streets all over the place. It's going to be ubiquitous pretty soon.
Wow. So it's going to be up there like a Honda Civic.
I think it really will. And there's also, you know, like Nissan, they've got a new, you know, sports sedan concept that supposedly is like going to be the new Maxima. And I think this is all going to happen, but that one, you know, we see Maximas all over the place.
Yeah.
And I guess Ultimas and vehicles like mm-hmm. that. And, you know, supposedly that pretty soon people are going to latch on to this new Maxima design and decide that that's the one. And, you know, he's kind of seeing these early trends saying that, you know, well, maybe it's not the fastest car like we talked about being a sleeper, but it's mm-hmm. something that's going to sell really well. So well that you're going to start noticing on the streets is like, well, there's another one of those. And there's another one. And by the way, while I'm sitting here, two more have passed.
Oh, and your cousin just bought one.
Exactly. And I may get one because, you know what, they look pretty darn good.
His last prediction in this article was one of the ones that really interested me.
Really?
Because it seemed kind of specific. It's something that I wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah.
So he noticed something about multiple cars at the show. He said, not just the Porsche Targa, the Lexus RCF, the M3, the Passat, the Chrysler 200, But even half of the Audi cars all have one thing in common.
What was that?
They were all blue.
Yeah. And a unique color of blue.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because he calls it Smurf blue.
Yeah.
Now, that's a funny way to say it, but I can picture that in my mind when he says it that way. I mean, that's a very descriptive way to say it. Smurf blue cars. And he says, what is it? And really, it's more of a question. It's like, what is with the Smurf blue cars at the Detroit Auto Show? Is this the new thing? And I'm going to say, I bet it is, because manufacturers are trying to bring out some supposedly, you know, again, in quotes, new colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a new color. You know, we've seen tuners do stuff like this. And it seems like, you know, the Plastidip cars that we talked about, a lot of those Plastidip cars seem like they end up like that Smurf color blue.
Yeah.
Kind of a flat matte color. Some of these are going to have, you know, gloss, of course. You know, they're going to be glossy finish from the manufacturer, typically, or matte finish, maybe. But especially these bright blue cars are what he's talking about. And I guess, you know, it's kind of a designer's choice, really, because before this, they were going with white colored cars, a lot of silver cars, because they show off the lines of them when they're under the lights of the auto show. Because, you know, they're carefully lit at the auto show, obviously.
Right.
Every manufacturer brings in their own little lighting technician to get things just right at their own booth or their own display. So, you know, they say, well, you know, these lighter color vehicles tend to show off the lines a little better. So we want silver, we want gray, we want white, occasionally black, but, you know, that's a little bit different because it doesn't quite show up the lines of the vehicle as well, the design. But, you know, these blue cars, these are kind of like a weird trend that he's noticing. And I bet we're going to begin seeing these on the road from the manufacturers soon.
Okay. Well,
I think it's going to happen.
Speaking of on the road, however, I needed to come to you for a little bit of life advice.
Okay.
All right. So traffic gets pretty nuts here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. No secret. You and I know all the back routes, like the back of our hand, but I'm still sitting there hating the radio because it's playing the same songs over and over, and I don't like any of them. What should I be listening to?
Well, I can tell you way around this, Ben. Now, we've been talking about audiobooks for a while now from audible.com. And this is kind of a longer one, so this will get you through several commutes if you want to do it that way, or if you want to, you know, take a long road trip, something like that. This is maybe a good idea for something like this.
Because, okay, I'm in.
The description here, well, I'll tell you about the title of it first. It's The Life of the Automobile. And it's a broad title. It's about 16 hours and 25 minutes long. So it's a longer version, right? Now,
right.
It's a good story, though. It's, and I guess a good whole narrative that goes along with this. And I'll just read the summary. It says, this book is the first comprehensive world history of the most important transport innovation of the modern age. Now, the author examines the impact, development, and significance of the automobile over its turbulent and colorful 130-year history. But this is not just the story of horsepower and performance. It's the tale of people, the flamboyant entrepreneurs, shrewd businessmen, and gifted engineers of outstanding success and abject failure. Now, so it's a little bit of everything. It's the good, the bad. It's the people involved. It's you know, saying like, well, of course, Henry Ford was great with the Model T, but here's a little bit more about Henry Ford. And, you know, Preston Tucker that we talked about, of course, that's going to be mentioned as well, I'm sure.
I'm fascinated.
But the one, you know, the sample that I downloaded was Henry Ford. Of course, it had to be, right?
Right.
That's what draws people in because he's very interesting. But there's so many different players in this book, people that you'll be, you know, excited to hear about. And if you like some of our historical podcasts, you know, on the people behind the vehicles, that's going to be something. This is going to be something that you're going to be interested in, I think.
And we have good news. If you're saying, well, guys, I don't want to pay to download an audiobook. We get it. We totally understand. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/carstuff. And just because Scott and Ben sent you, you'll get to download a free audiobook of your choice. Now, it doesn't have to be the story of the automobile. It could be any one of the hundreds of thousands of books that they have in their library.
Mm-hmm. This is, I would say that this is one that is right in our listeners' wheelhouse, though, because this is something that, you know, if you're a listener of Car Stuff, you know that we like to kind of dig a little deeper than just the vehicle itself. Like we do like to talk about, McLaren brand, but we also like to talk about Bruce McLaren. And we'd like to talk about the Model T, but we also like to talk about Henry Ford and, you know, the Tucker and Preston Tucker. So you get the idea that, you know, we really enjoy going a little bit further. And I think the book, The Life of the Automobile, is something that you're going to like as well.
Yes. And it's also a book that doesn't have really too much of an ending yet, because the story of the automobile continues. And we are going to continue with some more trends. Yeah. So I guess this would be the last chapter. Then.
Yeah, I think so. And tell you what, let's step it up a little bit. Let's move on quickly because
okay.
I think of greater interest to our listeners, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe is kind of the stuff that we think, our opinion stuff at the end. How about that?
All right, so, let's get to it.
So let's go through a few more articles and just quickly go through them, and not like what we did with the last one, but
okay.
Here's one that's called Car Tech Trends at the 2014 Consumer Electronics Show. So this is a tech article from Edmunds.com,
mm-hmm.
and the author's name is Ronald Montoya. And Ronald noticed that, all right, well, there's high-speed connectivity in your car, which is something pretty new.
Yep.
Because, you know, everybody wants connectivity in the car, of course, but, you know, we haven't really dealt with high-speed connectivity. I know that a lot of providers say they can provide something that's quicker than the competition, of course. That's all you hear on the radio now, it seems.
Yeah.
But we're getting to the point where, you know, they actually want high-speed connectivity, almost like what you would have at home or at the office in your vehicle, which is very, very tricky because of the rate of speed you're traveling and, you know,
right.
all the different zones you're traveling through mm-hmm. and satellite coverage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a long list of things that are challenges and successes, I guess, in this arena. The next thing he mentions is, the Android platform in cars. And this says, you know what, Ben, this is a good one to bring up right now because, this is about the Open Automotive Alliance or OAA. And I just last week published an article that, you know, one of our freelance writers wrote about the Open Automotive Alliance. And it'll tell you all about the Android platform in cars. And, this is a Google initiative and they are working with, I believe it's Audi, General Motors, Honda, and I think even Hyundai. Along with this. And there's also, a couple of tech companies, NVIDIA and, I mentioned Google already.
Uh-huh.
It's Google initiative, but, it's a big push to create, I guess, Android platform vehicles versus, you know, everybody's that,
a proprietary.
Yeah.
Problem.
Because right now we're seeing the push towards the Apple operating system.
Okay. Yeah. Which you can hear in the tech world kind of called a sandbox. And what that means is that this, one proprietary system, let's say BMW has their own proprietary system, that is able to sense other cars, but it only can sense other cars on that system. So an Audi with its own proprietary system, they would be invisible to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And not only that, I mean, people are saying, well, why do I have to have an iPhone or an Apple device rather?
Right.
In order to communicate with my car. Like, why do I need that in order to be able to, you know, be on a phone call, step into my car and have it continue in the car like, you know, a lot of people like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be an iPhone in order to work in this vehicle? Why can't I have an Android phone and make it work?
Why can't I be free? I gave you the money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's move on. So
okay.
Better infotainment controls to reduce distractions in cars. So that's obviously mm-hmm. self-explanatory. I don't know if we really need to go in too much in depth with that one, but easier to control devices, really. Also, how about making fuel cell vehicles more economically feasible? That's a big one. Now, fuel cells are something we'll see mentioned a lot of different places, but it seems been like they're really going to do this. And I know that we've talked about the Toyota FCV, which is the Toyota vehicle that they're currently only leasing to people.
Right, kind of like the EV1.
Yeah, you can't buy one. You can lease one, and I think there's only a few. There's only like I think there's only a few on the road actually. There's only 10 hydrogen stations in all of California right now. And that's the only place they lease these right now is in California.
Right.
And I think the first ones went to celebrities and things like that. You know, people that were high profile.
Sure.
That would get a lot of press, you know, that they had a fuel cell vehicle from Toyota. So, and not just only celebrities, but the initial people to use these or to lease these were those people.
Were like influencers.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, they're saying that, you know, it's actually more efficient than gasoline and it's more efficient than battery powered electric vehicles. It's just a matter of getting the infrastructure in place and they've been refining it all along. I mean, we've talked about them from the beginning of this show.
Yep.
The last 6 years and you know, it had been happening prior to that as well, but, you know, we saw them release these vehicles that were just, you know, the couple for lease and you couldn't buy them. Now they're talking about 2015 as the release date when anybody can get one. And 2015 is coming up pretty quick. And with only 10 hydrogen stations in one state alone, I don't know. But they're saying they're going to have at least 40 in California by 2016. So they're going to mm-hmm. up the game by 300%. Is that right?
If it works.
If it works, that's right. So they're going to up their infrastructure ability. I don't know if that's the way to say it. Maybe they're going to up their,
capacity.
Capacity. That's a better way to say it, Ben. But,
yeah.
You know, like 600% or whatever, 1,000%. They're going to start increasing and multiplying these stations and they're going to grow out from California and hopefully cover the United States. And I don't know what the plans are elsewhere.
State by state.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're going to go overseas with this as well, because if it's a big seller and if something's mm-hmm. popular, people are going to want to get one.
And I think in Japan, doesn't Japan already have some hydrogen filling station infrastructure?
I think they do, yeah. But again, it's very small. It's not anything like you would expect at this point, you know, for as long as we've been talking about it.
Oh, Scott. I'm sorry. I hate to say it, man.
What's that?
Well, you know as well as I do that we probably should make this two episodes.
Yeah, I guess time's running a little short, and man, there's so many trends that we want to get to, because there's just this huge list of just, you know, our Atlanta-centric view of what's going on, right?
Right, yeah. And there are, and I have already gone on a couple of rants at the slightest opportunity.
Nothing compared to me, buddy. I mean, we're running long on this. So, and you know what? We've also brought in some opinions of others. So, you know, there's good reason we're running long on this one, and we sure. do want to get to some of our specific things that we want to talk about at the very end of this whole thing. So
yeah.
maybe that's better to put it off to part two.
Okay, so we're going to make this a two-parter. We hope that you've enjoyed our first part so far. Be sure to tune in for 2014 Car Trends Part 2. In the meantime, drop us an email, send us a Facebook or Twitter message. Oh, and our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.